someone once said, something is missing. What is that? Women in Zen. Needless to say, this was a woman speaking. Women, Zen masters, to be precise, she said. Naturally, I responded, then you become one. Ever since the time of Gautama Buddha, of course, there have been women who have been Buddhas. But we must be careful not to mix things up. Last year in January, in San Francisco, of all places, when I gave a talk at the San Francisco Zen Center, as you might expect, California, a woman there asked, what is the role of women in Zen? What is the role, what is the place of women in Zen? How did I respond? I said, there is no place for women in Zen. You realize 20 years ago I may have been killed for that statement? In San Francisco, anyway. But I took my chances. I put my life on the line. And there at the San Francisco Zen Center, I said twice, because the first time I said it, a gasp went through the audience. And the moderator said, no place for women? She was a woman too. So I, just to make sure, said it again. Yes, there is no place for women in Zen. Then naturally I added, there is no place for men either. If you are concerned with that issue, and it is a very important one, there are places to deal with it. A retreat is not the place. Do you see any distinction here between men and women? There are so many examples that could be given. Of course, a number of them are right here. Recently, I've been working on the Zen record of Layman Pang. It's the one Zen record, the one classic Zen text about a lay person. Of course, this is another big issue, isn't it? What is the role of the lay person in Buddhism or in Zen? Again, a very good topic, a very important issue on many different levels, but not for a retreat. Is there any distinction here between monk and lay person? Is there? Does anyone see any distinction here between lay person and monk or nun? Okay. Around the 9th century in China, Zen was just coming to its own in China. There were many great Zen masters. This was the time of Matsu, or in Japanese, Basso. And from him, it exploded. Within a generation and a half, we have Rinzai, we have Joshu, we have the whole thing. It was such a rich time that one of the statements of that era was, on this mountain, very simply put, on this mountain was Sekito or Shito. And quite far away, but within traveling distance at the time, on this mountaintop was Matsu, Basso. Anyone who hasn't been back and forth between these two is a fool. Because at that time, almost all of the people serious about Zen practice were going to see Sekito or Shito. Who is he? Well, one of the quotes that I often give of him that I like very much is when a monk asks him, he has been saying, before it became popular, mind itself is Buddha. In other words, you yourself are awake. And so a monk says, but what about liberation, right? What about the goal of enlightenment? And Sekito responds, who binds you? Who binds you? That is Sekito. On the other mountain, where the many people were going back and forth, including Layman Pang, was Matsu. Matsu, or Basso, is considered the man from which it all blossomed and became Chinese Zen. He's the one who started giving shouts and striking and saying apparently very irrational things. Until then, Zen was a rather tame creature. But actually, it was the two of them. It was the two of them. And people were going back and forth. Sometimes Matsu, Basso, would say, go see Sekito. And sometimes Sekito would say, go see Basso, Matsu. Huh? They knew the needs of the people. And so the monks and the lay people were going back and forth. Well, one of the most outstanding of these was Layman Pang. As I mentioned on Friday evening, I believe, his great doubt was, who is the one who is not accompanied by the 10,000 things? In other words, who is it that is not affected by birth and death, by good and evil? Who is it that remains untouched? I want to know. I have to realize this one. And he goes to Sekito first. And when he asks that question, Sekito puts his hand over Layman Pang's mouth. And Layman Pang as a realization. After some time, he sent to Baso, to Matsu. According to the record, he asks the same question. He asks the same question. There's still something there to be resolved. So he's not going through the books and coming up with all kinds of smart questions. He's got only one, and it's his. So he asks the same question to Baso, to Matsu. Who is the one that does not accompany the 10,000 saints? And Baso, the master, Matsu, responds, swallow up all the water of the West River here in Europe, huh? Swallow up the Rhine in one gulp. Then I'll tell you. In other words, then you will know. With that, the last thread breaks, and Layman Pang has his great awakening. He then travels around. He has a family. He has a wife who also has a deep realization. His wife happens to be a woman, by the way, for anyone keeping track. He also has two children. One of them is a daughter. That means female. And both the son and the daughter also have a realization. So the whole family is deeply realized. And there are many enchanting poems and dialogues with the family members, or sometimes an old monk friend of Layman Pang comes to visit and his daughter comes out and I won't spoil the fun for you. You can read the book. There's an English translation. It will be out this year. But his whole family was deeply realized. This was a time in China when such a thing was possible. And he himself did not become a monk. Actually, when he had his first realization with Sekito, with Shito, put his hand over his mouth. Soon after, Sekito, the master, said, literally, will you wear the black or the white? In other words, will you wear the black robes of the monk or will you wear the white of a layman? Probably he was wearing the white at that time. The white signifies purity, and it's not work clothes. So a lay person in many parts of Asia will wear white. So in other words, are you going to become a monk or will you stay as a layperson? And Layman Pang's response is, it's hard to translate. The old translation in English says something like, I will do what I like, which misses the point completely. Layman Pang is saying, I will do as it is. I will do it as it is. So he remains a layman. He has no need to make that change. But once again, not only Layman Pang, but his whole family are said to be deeply realized. And this is a very important high point in lay Buddhist and lay Zen practice. He and his family are kind of the icons of lay Buddhism. The Chinese nowadays all know him, but they don't really know because of the unfortunate events of the last century. Much of it is lost. But they have some kind of an image. Something of the Layman Pang remains even in China today, although little of it. For us, when we finish this retreat, almost all of us will return to family, to lay life, to the world, so to speak. So it is indeed important and valuable to know, to have those touchstones. Indeed, there are and always have been lay men and lay women deeply realized, naturally. How could it be otherwise? The women, unfortunately, have not had a very big influence on the institution and the tradition, certainly not only in the Far East. However, there is one, as I mentioned, there's one classic Zen record, only one, about a layperson, and that's Layman Pan. There's one Zen record of a woman, although it's almost unknown, even in Japan. It's a Japanese woman who lived several hundred years ago. Her husband practiced Zen quite deeply, and he died, and she was very saddened by his death. And she ended up asking her deceased husband, her dead husband's master, if she could study under him, and she does. And she keeps a record, which has been kept, been recorded. She calls it the waste paper record, or the trash can record, a typical Zen expression. Huh? In other words, it's something for the trash, but it's recorded anyway. The temple in the monastery in Japan, in the Tokyo area, Hachioji, Kōunji, a friend of mine is the master there, and he, when he was a child, he read that in the warehouse where it was. It hadn't been made public. There were a number of records around the country, but they were just written. But he read it as a child and was deeply moved, because here was a woman, and a lay woman, struggling with these things and writing frankly about them. Yeah. Often the Zen records don't contain so much personal detail about the struggle, but she did. So he, the present Zen master of Kōunji, had some connections with Westerners, and the book has been translated into English, although it's not well known. It was just published privately by Kōunji, and it's out of print. I have an original copy in my office. I tried to get one to give to Sozu, but when I talked, I ended up having to talk with them over Rohatsu, the most intensive week where you don't lay down for the whole week. And I had called earlier, but they were busy preparing. So the head monk actually called me back during Rohatsu. He must have been very busy with other things, but he apologized and said all of the copies that they had made, it was the 300th anniversary, they have all, you know, these anniversaries in Japan, very big thing, huh? So they publish things and they give them as gifts. They had all been given away. So no problem, maybe next year. He said, don't worry, next year there's some other kind of a memorial and maybe we'll republish it again, but for now. So I made a photocopy and brought it with me and have given it to Sozu. So if anyone is interested, there is a woman Zen master, if you need one, and you can read her struggle. It has the English on one side and the Japanese on the other side. But again, these are important issues. Lay or monk. What about the role of women? These are very important issues, but not for a retreat. Is this clear? This is clear, huh? Okay. This is not a study group or a social action group, although study groups can be very valuable and social action groups are very important. But that is not what we are doing here. Okay? It's only been about 25 minutes, not a half an hour, but what are we in? The third, fourth, going into the fourth day? We're over the hump, if that helps. We're over halfway there, right? We're coming to the home stretch. But I think your legs must be very sore, so please stand up and stretch. Let me share with you something of Layman Pang. It's a very famous koan. It's the 42nd case of the Blue Cliff Record, one of the classic koan texts. But it's also in the record of Layman Pang. Very simply, it was a cold winter day in the mountains. Layman Pang had already completed his practice, and he was going to visit a friend monk, who had since become a Zen master at this mountain monastery. When he was leaving, as a sign of respect, the master had the new monks, the acolyte monks, go with him, Layman Pang, all the way as a mountain monastery, maybe some distance, to the front gate of the monastery to say farewell as a sign of respect to the layman. Well, as they were going down the mountain, these young new monks, the acolyte monks and Layman Pang, it was snowing. So, taking any opportunity, anything, anywhere, Layman Pang points at the snowflakes and he says, "Wonderful snowflakes, they fall in no other place." Or literally, in American English, "Each flake falls into place. Each flake falls into place." One of the monks with them doesn't understand, so he says to the layman, "Where do they fall? Where do they fall?" And the layman slaps him. In translating this with my friend, my friend knows Chinese much better, and he gave a very creative reading. Reading the characters, he said, "Layman Pang put his hand out." The Chinese is so ambiguous, it could mean that. Which is very nice too. Huh? Where do they fall? But unfortunately, I did some homework and asked some Zen masters and scholars, and they all agreed, "Nice, but no," he slapped them. My friend was really hoping that this was the spontaneity that doesn't slap. Anyway. Apparently he did slap the monk. So again, Layman Pang says, "Marvelous snowflakes, each one falling into place, into its own place." Huh? Remember, these are new monks. They're not yet used to living in the monastery. Huh? And they're going, accompanying the layman now, where he's to leave, to go on his way back to the world. Huh? what might be their doubts. And so Layman Pang, taking any opportunity, says, "Marvelous snowflakes, each one in its own place." But one of the monks can't get it, so he says, "Where do they fall? Where do they fall?" And the layman slaps him. Do you see the marvelous answer that that is? However, the monk still doesn't get it. So the monk says something like, "That's rather rude for a layman." Right? This is a monk, huh? "That's rather rude, rather coarse behavior for a layman." The layman responds something like, "You call yourself a monk," since he's making these distinctions, huh? Pretty coarse for a layman. "You call yourself a monk, but you're still caught by Mara." Mara is simply kind of the god of the dead. But here, maybe it's better understood as, you're still caught in the grip of illusion, of birth and death. So again, the monk says, "Where do they fall?" Layman Pang slaps him. So the monk says, "Rather rude for a layman." And then the layman says, "You call yourself a monk, but you're still caught in illusion, to put it simply." Okay? So far, you follow? So naturally, the monk is pretty good. He has some spirit. He has some spirit. He doesn't give up. So he says, "Well, what about you, layman? Well, what about you, layman?" He has spirit. He hasn't seen yet, but he has spirit at least. "Well, what about you, layman?" The layman slaps him again. And says, in the old translations, 3 or 4, you know, from the Blue Cliff Record and also the Record of Layman Pang, they all say something like, they put the subject in, "Your eyes see like the blind, your mouth speaks like a mute," someone who can't speak. In other words, condemning this monk. "You don't see a thing. You're talking, but your words don't make sense. You're hearing, but you don't really hear a thing." However, as a matter of fact, in the Chinese, there is no subject. Do you follow? In classical Chinese, the subject is not stated. So who is Layman Pang talking about? All of the translators, and actually the modern Japanese interpreters, tend to say Layman Pang is criticizing the monk. Clearly up until now he has been, so it makes sense. It's a consistent reading. "You see like you're blind. You hear like you're deaf." Very simply, like saying, "You idiot." However, my stubborn friend who is always speaking of freedom and spontaneity wanted to translate it, and I think we let him get away with this, but I have my doubts. But anyway, he made it, "Seeing without eyes, hearing without ears." In other words, he made it Layman Pang speaking about himself, because actually the question was, "What about you, layman?" So he slaps him, and he's responding, "I hear without ears. I speak without a mouth," something like that. Huh? He gives it up. Interesting. We can play with these things, but that's not the point. With this, I think you can get a bit of a taste of Layman Pang. having gone this far, maybe we can expect some snow. In the Blue Cliff Record, do all of you know this? It's a classic Zen koan text, very complicated. There's 100 cases, and there's usually a kind of an introductory pointer, then there's the koan, and then there are comments, and then there are poems, and there are poetry lines for each line commenting on the poem of the former. It's very, very elaborate, very, very profound, but very, very difficult, very elaborate. But one of the better statements of the whole Blue Cliff Record is a comment on this case. Do you grasp the whole case now? Right? Layman Pang sees the snow, says this, has the exchange with the monk about the original meaning of these snowflakes, huh? Falling. The person who puts the Blue Cliff Record together gives this case, and then he says, if I was there, when Layman Pang first opened his mouth, I would have just made a snowball and hit him with it. Do you see what a marvelous response this is? Taking the layman's own snow and playfully, lovingly hitting him with it, saying thank you. Huh? I didn't know that they had snowball fights in Tang Dynasty China, but I guess they did. Once again, this is the flavor of a layperson deeply realized, just as we all must be. To help you on your way, I think you can see the whole Zendo. We are sitting in deep samadhi concentration. There's a good deal of pain, too, that sometimes there's a great amount of sleepiness, of tiredness, achiness, but unmistakable, a very deep calm, and everyone, to some extent, is partaking, is joining in that, and this is helping to smooth and continue, sustain everyone in their practice. To give you a few other tidbits, little things to nibble on in your practice. When Koan Zen was developing in China, this is later than Layman Pang, this is the time of Yunmen or Ummon, very famous Zen master, perhaps most famous for the koan about every day is a fine day or every day is a good day. That was Ummon. In one of his lectures, he describes the koans of those times. This is late 9th century, early 10th century China. At that time, the koans that were used and what they did with them. So please, listen, take it in, and if it is useful, digest it, make use of it, bring it to life in your own practice. To quote the words of Ummon or Yummen. The old men, the men of old, definitely had some words. Literally, the term words is entangling vines. There's a koan collection called that. because they're considered like entangling vines that we get caught up in and we can't even move, perhaps. So the meaning is words, but the original sense is words as something that tangles us up and won't let us go. The old man definitely had some words entangling vines, which could be of help. For instance, the whole world is nothing but you. The whole world is nothing but you. He gives another example. Get hold, grasp. Get hold of me on the tips of the 100 grasses. Recognize the emperor in the bustling marketplace. Get hold of me on the 100 grasses, a summer scene, in each flake of snow. Recognize the emperor. Of course, this is symbolism, not the emperor, but that which you consider most holy, huh? The emperor in the bustling marketplace, right? In the most worldly place. Another example he gives. The moment a speck of dust, dirt, huh? Dust. The moment a speck of dust arises, the whole world is contained in it. One more. On the tip of a single lion's hair, the whole body is manifest. On the tip of a single lion's hair, the whole body is manifest. Okay? So, a number of typical statements that came to be used in early Zen as koans. Continuing this quote from Yunmen or Unmon, he's talking to his monks. Try to get a firm hold on these sayings, pondering them from all angles, and after days or years, an entrance will open by itself. This matter does not allow anyone to step in for you. No one can do this for you. It is nothing but each person's very own mission or task. This is how koans were dealt with in early Zen, perhaps how they should be today. Does anyone have any questions? Is there anything you didn't understand? Are you okay? Yeah, you can ask later, huh? Oh, I'm sorry. Well, having said as much as I have, what do you think a layman is?
Probably somebody in the monk that is different.
Exactly. In other words, sorry. If I say something and you don't understand, please, you know, feel free right then to speak up, okay? You're right, yeah. Lay means not ordained. In other words, you haven't, for example, as Sozui has done. Sozui has her head shaved and she has taken vows to practice for her life a certain way and to live a certain way, right? Taking the precepts, not just the lay, they have lay precepts, but the precepts of a nun or a monk. In a sense, it also means leaving the world. For example, not making money, not working for money. There are many things that they can and cannot do just in order to focus on the religious life. Okay? A lay person is someone who remains in the world. So, almost all of us here are lay people. Okay? Yes.
There was this question like the one person who couldn't find his freedom, and I don't know who it was, but he responded by who binds you.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that was Sekito, huh?
Sekito, yeah. Right. Huh? I mean, I thought it was Bodhidharma. I read it somewhere.
No.
Wasn't it Bodhidharma?
No. Yeah, it's actually part of a larger statement that Sekito makes. He's talking about mind itself is Buddha, or you are awake. And so the monk actually asks three questions. The first one is that one.
Yep.
Right, okay, so do you get the context, huh? If, as you say, right, I am awake, mind is Buddha, well then, why are you sitting all night? Right? Why do we do this? Right? I would imagine in this case the monk probably had some practice already, and he maybe thought he was rather close to the goal. Huh? And yet all of a sudden, the master, perhaps he's always talking this way, but now it hits him. You are awake. Mind is Buddha. Mind doesn't attain Buddha. Mind is Buddha. So you can imagine the question. Huh? The question makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Well, if so, what about liberation? I was 80% of the way there. Huh? And then, at that point, right, rather than saying, one more retreat, Casper, sit through the night tonight, no, he says, he pulls the rug completely out from under him by saying, right here, right now, who binds you? Who binds you in opposition to this? See, I want to be liberated. Well, you took my liberation away, huh? Well, that's not the problem. Who binds you? When you see there, the problem with liberation is gone. Right here and right now, who binds you? And then it actually continues. The monk says, well, then what about the Pure Land? He's talking about the three pillars, you know. This is a pillar, huh? The three pillars of Zen, huh? Well, not just Zen, but Buddhism, of all of Buddhism. Liberation, Gedatsu, it's actually an old Hindu term, Vimukti, huh? To be liberated from everything. And then the monk continues, what about the Pure Land? Another basic teaching of Buddhism. For those who can't realize it, there is a way of just giving one's practice to a certain Buddha, Amida Buddha, and he, through his grace, you are saved. It may even sound like Christianity, although it's not. Okay? So what about the Pure Land, this pure land? It's really a place where you can practice. It's the ideal place to practice because the thought is we can't awaken now. It's too corrupt. Our minds are too full of dis-ease. So we have to go somewhere else. So the teaching, you might say, out of compassion is, okay, when you leave this world, you will go to a pure land and there you can practice without any hindrance. So maybe the monk is thinking, huh? I think I can get liberation this time, huh? But just in case, in his back pocket, he's got the Pure Land too, huh? So he's throwing everything out he's got, huh? Yeah, yeah. So what about liberation? That's what he's staking his life on. Who binds you? He doesn't get it yet. So, but the Pure Land, if you say mind is Buddha, oh, what about the Pure Land? And he says, who defiles you? Who makes you dirty? Do you see? And then he says, what about nirvana? Right? The even more fundamental goal of Buddhism is nirvana. Right? And he says, who puts you in samsara? Which is, of course, supposed to be the problem, right? Right here and right now, who puts you in samsara, the endless realm of suffering, of dis-ease, of transmigration, in opposition to you? This is essential then, before there was a koan.
Like he throws the answers in space, or the questions, he turns around and throws back in space.
Yeah, I would rather say he pulls the rug out. He pulls the place that the monk is standing on out from under him. That's the real Genjo koan. You see? Because the monk is still seeking something somewhere.
Yeah.
Thus his question. You see?
Yeah.
Liberation. As I put it, I don't see any chains on you. Because that's what Sekito sees. Huh? But what about the Pure Land? Do you need a bath? Nirvana, right? Where everything, all delusion is gone. Hmm? Right here, right now, who put you in samsara? Samsara. Samsara is in opposition to nirvana. Nirvana is the goal where all suffering is gone. Samsara is this world of endless dis-ease. Okay? So even when we die in ancient Indian thought, we don't just die, we are reborn depending on the results of our actions in this life. Maybe we are reborn as an animal if we have done very bad things. Or maybe we are born as a god with a small g. But even that is all part of samsara. When the virtue of that life is gone, the god may be reborn as an animal. So even what is called the gods are still part of samsara. That's still the realm of samsara. Why? Because when those conditions, relatively pleasant in this kind of a heavenly realm, when those conditions end, they still suffer distress. So all of that is called samsara in Sanskrit. Literally, in Chinese, they use two characters, birth and death, birth and death, birth and death. That's how they translate it. Okay? And that's in opposition to nirvana. It's thought that Buddha put an end to that whole realm of samsara. He extinguished the flame. That's what nirvana means. To extinguish the flame that keeps that process going. Okay. But again, here Sekito is pulling that whole mind out from under the monk. Because he's saying, right now, who put you in samsara? That, in a sense, is the Genjo koan before there was a koan. For that monk, at that time, at that place.
The monk was saying, this guy called Anishanti, and he said, like all paths lead away from truth.
Mm.
Everything you do leads away from it, because it's already here, so where are you going? That's struggling. It looks a bit like, sounds a bit like what you said.
Yeah, Meister Eckhart, since we're in the mission house here, huh? Meister Eckhart also speaks of when you seek God in ways, through some kind of means, huh? Through ways, you find ways, but not God, who in ways is hidden. Huh? Yeah, yeah. And that's very important in our practice as well. As we become really centered in samadhi and we develop our meditation techniques, sometimes those techniques become something that bind us. Any way must be done away with. In the depths of our zazen, there cannot even be zazen. Right? Any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The Genjo, what Gen is
root? No. It means arawaru, Japanese? To become manifest. So literally, presently manifest. Koan. Jo is something like manifest, presently, here. The first chapter of Dogen, Shobo Genzo. Do you practice at Bukokuji?
Mm.
Did you? Yeah, okay. Do you know Belinda?
Yeah.
An old friend of mine. Genjo Koan is the first chapter of Dogen's Shobo Genzo. Since you mention it, maybe I'll introduce a bit, huh? I have a few minutes. So in other words, a koan, you know something, huh? Of what a koan is. There are books of koans, huh? Does the dog have Buddha nature or not? Joe Shu said, moot, that has become a koan. Originally, we might say, it was that monk's Genjo koan. In other words, at that time and place, the monk didn't formulate anything. He didn't read it in a book. Probably there was a dog there, and the master was there, and somehow it struck him. That was his living, present, at the moment koan. So he asked. You see what I mean? That's where it became manifest. Okay? Let me end by, out of respect for the Soto tradition, read a little excerpt from the Shobo Genzo, the Genjo Koan section, okay? It's very famous, almost all, I'm sure you've heard it. I'm sure Harada Tangen Roshi gave Teisho on it. Learning the Buddha way is learning oneself. Sound familiar?
No?
You must have been sitting very deeply. Learning the Buddha way is learning oneself. Learning oneself is what? Is forgetting oneself. You've forgotten very well. Once again, from Dogen's Genjo Koan, learning the Buddha, this is my own translation, learning the Buddha way is learning one's self. Learning one's self is forgetting self. Forgetting self is according with, being one with all conditions. Being one with all conditions is the body, mind of self and other undone. Usually it's translated body, mind, fallen off. But I say body, mind, undone. That much is a very famous quote. Probably all of you have heard it somewhere or seen it on a website. But the next sentence, which they usually leave out, is the real point that Dogen is getting to. The real point is the next. Okay, he's just said, when you are one with all conditions, body, mind fall off. Body, mind is undone. Not just your body, mind, but the body, mind of self and others. Undone. Continuing Dogen. No trace of realization remains then. No trace of realization remains then. And this traceless realization continues on without end. That is what continues on. Do you see? traceless realization. A good way to end, I think. Thank you for listening so intently.